minutes after 8 o'clock. Welcome to The Morning Magazine for Friday, May 27th. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up after the headlines, we hear from a group of our interns at KGNU about what it's like growing up in an era of mass shootings. After that, it's Sports Talk with Jimmy Searfoss. And finally, as always, it's .org, our weekly segment that showcases the work of local nonprofits. At 8:30, Connections comes your way. As always, the phone lines will be open. Today, Duncan and Lisa Graves talk about how the Supreme Court is affecting American democracy. Then at 9:30, we will bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead, but first, these local and regional headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
The American Civil Liberties Union filed a lawsuit Thursday challenging the enforcement of two Boulder ordinances prohibiting overnight camping and the use of tents or temporary structures for shelter or storage of property. The ACLU argues that even when unhoused people are turned away from the Boulder Shelter for the Homeless, especially during freezing nights or dangerous weather, the Boulder police continue to enforce the bans. According to the ACLU, since last summer, the Boulder Shelter for Homeless has turned away more than 250 people, with two-thirds of them turned away on nights with freezing temperatures. The group also alleges Boulder in recent years has slashed funding for shelters and has instead allocated resources to criminalizing unhoused people. The ACLU says its clients are both housed and unhoused Boulder residents, and the nonprofit Feet Forward, whose staff and volunteers have also experienced homelessness in Boulder. As the nation mourns the mass killing of 19 young children and two adults at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas, police throughout the Denver metro area responded yesterday to reports of suspicious activity and threats affecting at least three schools. Officials placed Denver's Northfield High School on lockdown early Thursday after receiving a report of an armed student. Denver police later arrested two juveniles and recovered a paintball gun at the school. According to the Colorado Sun, police declined to release additional information about the suspects. The Greenwood Village Police Department announced Thursday the agency is investigating a social media message sent by an unknown individual threatening to, quote, shoot up Cherry Creek High School. In response to the threat, officials placed the high school and the nearby Campus Middle School and Bellevue Elementary School on a secure perimeter, meaning officials locked all exterior doors while classroom activity was happening inside. According to the Denver Post, law enforcement later decided it was safe to let the high school students go home and to dismiss the middle and elementary school students at their normal times. In Boulder, police responded to a report by school security at Casey Middle School, who noticed two students acting suspicious. Police later determined a theft was taking place, and officers also found an airsoft gun in one of the students' backpacks. In consultation with the Boulder County District Attorney's Office, police said they issued a ticket for theft to a 13-year-old student and did not file charges related to the airsoft gun. The incident comes a day after Boulder police arrested a Casey Middle School student who reportedly made shooting threats to the school. According to a Boulder police spokesperson, the two incidents do not appear related. East Lafayette's Willoughby Corner gets a green light for permitted affordable housing. KGNU's James Swenson has more.
The Boulder County Housing Authority announced Wednesday that it has received funding for a proposed building plan in East Lafayette. The median home value in Lafayette is approaching $700,000, and the rent is close to $2,000 a month. The Willoughby Corner site will provide about 400 new units and allot 100 of those to affordable housing. The Boulder County Housing Authority says that the Willoughby Corner will use low-income housing tax credit to fund the plan. Low-income housing tax credits are a financing tool through which investors fund construction. Investors buy tax credits from developers. That money subsidizes the construction of housing while giving investors a tax break. BCHA's affordable homes save residents hundreds of dollars per month in rent and utilities, allowing families to save money for their future. William Shutkin, a faculty member with the CU Boulder Masters of Environment program, says, Willoughby Corner is a case study in the best of inclusive, resilient, and sustainable community development. The area will include a dog park, walking and biking trails, community gardens, and electric charging stations. The projected start date is early next year. For For KGNU, I'm James Swenson.
A new analysis reported Thursday by Forward.us, an organization working to reform the nation's immigration and criminal justice systems, estimates 2,000 undocumented Colorado high school students graduating this spring will encounter even greater challenges than previous undocumented high school graduates because of the cutoff date for DACA eligibility. The students are likely ineligible for DACA because they entered the United States after June 15, 2007. The organization says without DACA, the graduates will not have access to work authorization to support themselves and their families and will not receive fair tuition rates, which will severely affect their career and educational prospects. The organization also argues the barriers will limit the graduates' abilities to take part in the workforce, grow the economy, and contribute to their communities as the state deals with a labor shortage. A 35-member committee to the State Board of Education, tasked with making statewide curriculum guidelines for history and civic classes, has removed its previous LGBTQ references and standards for young students, along with removing many references to African Americans, Latinos, Asian Americans, Indigenous people, and religious minorities. According to the Denver Post, the committee has also stripped some LGBTQ references and standards for middle and high schoolers. The committee's removal of the references comes in response to public feedback on its November 2021 draft of curriculum guidelines, which initially added language to include the perspectives of people of color and those who are LGBTQ. When the committee developed the guidelines, committee members also attempted to adhere to legislative requirements, including a 2019 state law, which requires public schools to teach the experiences and perspectives of Black, Latino, Native American, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and queer people. The Denver Post reports Joyce Rankin, a Republican on the State Board of Education, also requested many changes from the committee's November draft and asserted the inclusion of, quote, LGBTQ and, quote, migration in history standards for second graders, quote, could be interpreted as indoctrination. The committee addressed Rankin's critiques in a separate 18-page document. The committee, made up of social studies teachers throughout Colorado, will present its final revisions in June to the State Board of Education, who will then vote on a final version of guidelines later in the year. Today's weather includes partly sunny skies with highs in the upper 80s. There is a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms for Boulder and Fort Collins in the afternoon, with some storm activity producing gusty winds. Tonight, skies will be mostly cloudy with lows in the 50s. For tomorrow, the National Weather Service predicts mostly cloudy skies with highs reaching into the upper 80s once again. The current temperature in Boulder is 59 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
The school shooting in Uvalde, Texas this weekend has rattled people across the nation. Here at KGNU, we've had a lot of conversations about how to cover the death of the 19 children and two adults who lost their lives to an 18-year-old gunman. One of the more helpful conversations, we all thought, was with our interns, all of whom were born after the 1999 Columbine shooting and grew up in an age of lockdown drills. To share their stories, we have them all in studio today. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Kiara, I wanted to start with you. Can you just introduce yourself and then tell me about lockdown drills? Give me a description of what they're like.
Yeah, definitely. So I grew up in Colorado. So school shootings has always been part of the conversation. So for as long as I can remember, we've been doing lockdown drills for probably every few weeks to maybe once a month. And how it goes is they would announce over the intercom that we're doing a lockdown drill, and then we'd turn off all the lights, we'd all crawl under our desks, and we would just wait. And they'd have the principal go around and, like, bang on every single door. And excuse me, we would get rewarded. The quietest class, when he banged on the door, would get, like, a reward to try to teach us to, like, be as quiet as possible in those situations.
Okay, so Kiara, you didn't introduce yourself. This is Kiara Damari. She is 20 years old and she's a CU student. She grew up in Colorado. And that sounds really scary. I mean, can you just tell me, was it scary?
Yeah, definitely. And I think they tried to make it as scary as possible just to make it kind of real, I guess, as sort of a prep.
So, I mean, then this question is to all of you. What was your sense of school shootings? Like, did you understand? Did you think they were going to happen? I mean, like, how much of a threat was this to you?
Oh, it, most definitely. My name is Jimmy Sierra Foss. I'm a CU student. I'm 20 years old from Texas. Went to high school in Texas. And we definitely did know. Like we said, we grew up just after Columbine. You know, Sandy Hook was, what, 2013? All throughout school, at least elementary school, middle school, high school, there's at least one big one, pretty much. And we all grew up around phones, the internet, you know, social media. You're not hiding this kind of thing, especially how big it is and, you know, how talked about it is these days. We're going to hear about it. We know what it's about. When you hear about the lockdown drills, it got to a point where, like, oh, you know, who's going to shoot up a school? It's more of a, it became so normalized, it was more of a joke, really, these days.
You said one of you mentioned that I think it was you, Jimmy, who you each have experiences of times when you thought it was real.
Oh yeah, we I know one time it was my senior year. We had a kid bring a BB gun to school, but no one knew it was a BB gun, and it kind of showed some of the flaws in the lockdown drills, especially given that my teacher didn't know it was a real incident. And she thought it was a drill. I was in a home ec class. We were cooking, and we just kept cooking. Like, we were making pies, and we didn't shut the doors, and the lights were on, playing music. And then we were trying to tell the teacher that it was real, and she didn't believe us. And then it was like, oh, crap, she realized that this is real. And then it was just kind of chaos. You know, somebody's crying, and somebody's laughing about the situation. Some people are still cutting apples because they don't know what else to do with themselves. Then they put us in the back of the class, into the pantry, and just like, if this is real, and now we're all just sitting in a pantry, and that's not very effective at all.
Huh. I mean, I feel like, you know, there's only so much you can do. I mean, much preparing, but I don't think anyone has the correct answer.
And it shows just the kind of communication breakdown that happens, because they were sending emails and stuff, but if someone's not checking their email, they're sending texts, someone's not on their phone, I mean they can come on and announce it all they want. There's no, I mean, it's sometimes just communication breaks down and things like that.
Well, Luis, I wanted to ask you, so Luis, will you introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Luis. I'm originally from Texas, but I actually attended school here in Colorado since middle school. So,
I didn't know you were from Texas. So yesterday you were telling me a story about how you go into any place and you find somewhere and you think mentally about where do I hide? Tell me about that. I feel like older generations don't do that. And so that was surprising to me.
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of goes back to what Jamie said. I feel like we become so normalized with school shootings all the time. We have phones and stuff like that, and we just become desensitized. I mean, every time I go into a classroom or something, I kind of figure out what to do in case of a situation if a shooter walked into the class or something like that, or if I'm in public, at grocery stores, I mostly hang out in the back of the store.
Really?
Yeah. Instead of
because you're worried about a shooter?
Yeah. I guess safety measures, I don't know, for myself. It's
So it's on your mind.
Yeah, it's always on my mind, going into a restaurant. I like to sit in corners instead of in the open. It's just something
How do you think that affects you just in general?
I mean,
your sense of safety.
I mean, I feel like I kind of I don't know how to explain it. It's just my sense of safety, I feel like it increases a little bit more knowing that I'm vigilant and stuff like that. It's just something I've just been doing for a very, very long time. So,
Do you always lock your doors and stuff like that?
I do. I hate having my door open even in my room. Even at home, I know that nothing's going to happen at home, but I always have it closed. When I'm in in a library, I like to go into corners and stuff like that.
Seems it's normalized, but it's always there.
Yeah, I feel like I do it so much to the point where I don't think about it anymore. You know, I just do it, and then it's just a part of my routine. So it just happens constantly.
Huh, Kiara, I know that you you mentioned something similar. So you feel you do kind of the same.
Yeah, definitely. My main thing for me personally is movie theaters. After, you know, the Aurora movie theater shooting, I always...
How old were you?
I don't know. Probably like 10, I think, somewhere along that. But now I'm very like, I always make sure I know where the exits are. Like, I always have a plan in mind. And same thing when I go grocery shopping, that kind of never, I never thought about doing that until last year. And now that's like always on my mind whenever I'm, yeah.
Interesting. So how did your parents tell you about these things? Like, I was talking to my sister, like, because my sister has two younger children in elementary school. And I was like, what are you planning on telling them? She's like, well, I'm going to try to not tell them, you know, I'm going to try to keep them at a distance. Did your parents talk to you, or how did you find out about these things? And when you found out, how did you feel?
It, like I said, I mean, it's again, like, you're not hiding these things. It was more of, for my parents and everything, it was just more of a, we're all just kind of learning about it at the same time. It was more just how to deal with it. You know, you had that sit down of, you know, just what would you do? Be safe, you know, find your exits, things like that. But, you know, we're all pretty much learning this information all at the same time, constantly. We all have Twitter, and that's where, you know, where the main source of information is these days. So it's more of just a walking your kid through it, more of it than introducing it to you and to the kid. So that's, I think, what the biggest thing that has been for parents these days.
Were your parents ever nervous to send you to school, or were you ever afraid to go to school?
I only remember one time I was given an option. So I think my freshman year of high school, someone threatened to bomb the school, something like that.
So that seems scary.
I mean, it was run on a bathroom stall. I mean, like I said, that might have been a bigger deal some other time, but I guess in times like these, I guess that's more like, oh God, all right, that's probably fake. I mean, it was taken seriously, but it was given an option. They made it an excused absence if we wanted to miss. I mean, I still went, but that was the only time I really think about someone probably being worried. Probably just the day before, you know, everyone has threats. The school had constant threats, but I'm not entirely sure.
So, I mean, so this is my final question. And so as someone who has grown up in schools with this threat, what do you think that, like, what do you think needs to change? Do you guys have any feedback or ideas or anything like that?
Well, in my opinion, I feel like there needs to be more change, like, in leadership-wise. I feel like a lot of people who we, like, vote in into, like, Congress or the Senate, I feel like their lack of leadership is really, like, showing, especially during times like these. And honestly, I feel like there's ways we could prevent this by implementing legislation and stuff like that. And I just feel like there just needs to be some kind of, like, leadership change, and, yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much. Luis Licon, Jimmy Searfoss, Kiara DeMari, I appreciate you talking with us.
Thank you for having us.
Up next, it's sports news with Jimmy Searfoss.
Talking sports?
Yeah, we're talking sports over here.
Sports? Where?
Right here.
Hello and welcome to Sports Talk with Jimmy. I am your host, Jimmy Searfoss, coming at you with the sports talk from the Front Range. You know, often we like to keep things local on this segment, and we will get there here soon, but it's tough to focus on sports when the entire country has experienced the tragedies like the ones this week. The tragedies have sparked a nationwide conversation that has made its way to the sports world. Many teams often you'll see put out a release denouncing an incident that took place somewhere, but multiple teams and players have taken this one a step further. Golden State Warriors head coach Steve Kerr went viral in a press conference when he refused to take basketball-related questions and instead went into a 3-minute speech about the need for gun control. In Major League Baseball, the New York Yankees and Tampa Bay Rays each used their Twitter platforms to spread information about gun violence in America by posting statistics backed by sources. In fact, athletes across the entire sports world use their Twitter platforms to speak out against gun violence. Moving into some more local news, the Niwot Cougars girls track team added its third consecutive state title Sunday, and it wasn't even close. Track events are scored by points in high school. The better the finish, the more points a team gets. The Niwot girls team finished with 171 points. The runner-up team had 61. They won 8 of the events in their dominant run to the title and did so with gratitude, which is also the team's slogan for the year. The Cougars will look to continue their dynasty and add a 4th title in the coming season. The Boulder Valley School District is sending a current student and an alumni to represent Team Colorado in the 2022 USA Special Olympic Games in Orlando, Florida. Student Michelle Zhang will be competing in tennis, while alumni Lee Schaefer will be on the swim team. And this is not Zhang's first rodeo. She's won gold medals in other events like the slalom in the 2017 and 2018 Regional Special Olympic Games. She's been preparing for the tennis event by competing against both men and women at her school. Schaefer is no stranger to competition either. In 2019, she won 3 gold medals at the state meet in Grand Junction for the Special Olympics team in Boulder. She's been training up at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs to prepare for the games, and she is only 1 of 4 competitors for the Team Colorado in the swimming section. She will compete in the 50-meter butterfly, the 50-meter freestyle, and the medley relay. The freestyle is her specialty, though. The games start June 5th and will go through the 12th. All of us here at KGNU are wishing them the best of luck in their competitions. And that is all the time I have for you guys today. This has been Sports Talk with Jimmy. I have been your host, Jimmy Searfoss, for KGNU.
Up next, it's .org, our weekly segment featuring the work of a local nonprofit.
Welcome to .org, KGNU's look at local nonprofits.
A Precious Child is a group who assists children and families facing difficult life challenges. Chief Communications Officer Courtney Wickberg.
Precious Child started in the garage of our CEO and founder, Karina Martin. She saw a huge need in the community at the time for basic essentials and helping children in need have access to those basic essentials. We work with more than 500 agency partners that help us identify families and children that are in need, and they refer them to our services.
And what are some of the programs you offer?
We really focus on 5 economic mobility initiatives, and that's family and child advocacy, family stability, academic success, social and emotional well-being, and workforce development. We're really looking at the child from cradle to career. Our empowerment center, that's where our case management team resides, and they're able to really identify what different needs our families have. And so they're able to not only help families have access to all of the programming that a precious child provides, but they can also connect them to different community resources. And our case managers are also working with our families to help them create SMART goals and take real steps on getting on the path to self-sufficiency. Our educational essentials program, that helping bridge the gap that these children are seeing on their educational path and not be deterred by cost. When we started A Precious Child, we really wanted to serve our children holistically. We really looked at the child to see what were the things that they needed to really succeed in life. Because when you're a child, you need to show up to school prepared and confident. Our Fill a Backpack program, making sure that these kids had backpacks filled with school supplies once they're graduating high school, then connecting them to different opportunities that they may be able to have. We are in the process of building a coffee shop so that participants in the program will be able to work at that coffee shop, but then also be paired with a mentor.
How has the pandemic affected your organization?
We are considered an essential service. During the pandemic, overnight, we are able to really focus our efforts on providing hygiene items, cleaning supplies, and diapers and wipes. We were able to really figure out what the needs were in the community at the time, and then we were able to distribute those to the families that truly needed those the most.
Can people help by volunteering?
Even though 2020 was a crazy year, typically a normal year for A Precious Child, we see more than 9,000 volunteers. So when we're looking to serve more than 60,000 children, we rely heavily on the community support and volunteers to make that happen. If the pandemic has taught us anything, it's that any one of us could very well be in a case that we are needing support. If I ever needed help, how would we want to be treated? And we are providing our services in such a dignified way that we would be proud to receive services if we were ever on the other end.
For more information, please go to apreciouschild.org. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
For their link and another listen, go to our blog at kgnu.org/dotorg.
And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Alexis Kenyon. Thank you to Stacey Johnson, James Swenson, Jimmy Sirfas, Luis Licon, Kiara Damari, Steve Miller, and Chris Schultz for all of their help with today's show. Stay tuned for Connections with Duncan and Lisa Graves just after these headlines from the BBC.